Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Second, President Trump determined that our exploding trade deficits had brought us to the brink of an economic and national security catastrophe. He further pronounced that the traffic of fentanyl and other opioids into our country has created a public health crisis, taking hundreds of thousands of American lives. President Trump has declared that these emergencies are country-killing and not sustainable, that they threaten the bedrock of our national and economic security, and that fixing them will make America a strong, financially viable, and respected country again.
Here you go. This is the Supreme Court oral argument on one of the most significant questions of the current and future operation of this country, whether President Trump, or any president, does or does not, under existing law, have the authority to impose sweeping, across the board, targeted, small, massive, product specific or not, tariffs on the importation of foreign goods. That's what they heard for 2.5 hours on Wednesday. I told you yesterday briefly, I didn't talk a lot about this because I don't like to talk about things until I've had really a chance to digest them. And, I did not have the 2.5 hours to do it on Wednesday, but I did have it since then. And I now have listened, and I now know what I think, and I will tell you as we go along. I will give you the forewarning about this. President Trump is not going to like this outcome. It's coming. John Sauer, Solicitor General for the United States, very capable Solicitor General, by the way, against Neil Katyal, who is also an incredibly capable Supreme Court attorney who, many, many, many times has appeared before the court. So first thing to understand is this is under a law that's referred to as IEEPA, which has to do with emergencies. Normally, the president doesn't have the power to do a lot of things like regulate the importation and exportation of goods, because that's a foreign commerce power, which is the domain of Congress. But because when we are in tense circumstances, like say a war, regulating commerce is an important part of foreign policy. So for example, if you're at war with, say, Vietnam, and they depend on us for trade, you don't want the president to be unable to say, yeah, we are not going to buy those goods right now. So Congress created this law that gave the president the power to regulate, is the important word here, imports and exports. And the question is, does that include whether he has the power to impose tariffs on imports? The administration says yes. And to spoiler alert, everybody else says no, because tariffs are financial instruments. They are revenue raising. They are a kind of tax. And so the question in this case, the key question in this case, there are other questions, but the key question in this case is whether a tariff is a tax or whether a tariff is a regulation. Answer, it's a tax. And because it raises money. So Congress did not specify that you have the ability to raise money. They did not specify that you have the ability to impose tariffs, even though they elsewhere, regulations and tariffs has been used together many, many times. And so that's the whole issue. Does the president, in declaring a fentanyl crisis or a trade deficit crisis, one of which is new and one of which has been going on for a long time, does he then have the ability under the emergency powers granted by IEEPA, the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, that is meant to temporarily provide in an emergency congressional power to the president so that he can solve the emergency? Does it give him the power to impose sweeping tariffs or tariffs of any kind without congressional approval? That's another key part of this question. Again, the Trump administration says, yeah, duh. And everybody else says, nuh-uh.
Due to IEEPA tariffs, President Trump has negotiated agreements worth trillions of dollars with major trading partners, including most recently China. Unwinding those agreements, he warns, would expose us to ruthless trade retaliation by far more aggressive countries and drive America from strength to failure with ruinous economic and national security consequences.
So he's done really good things with the power, having to undo those things or losing that power, the threat by which he has negotiated all these solutions, that would ruin us because it would take away this key instrument of the president's power.
Yet plaintiffs argue that tariffs, IEEPA's least blunt and most nimble tool, are virtually the only tool that Congress did not grant the president to deal with foreign emergencies. That is wrong. The phrase regulate importation plainly embraces tariffs, which are among the most traditional and direct methods of regulating importation. And plaintiffs concede that IEEPA authorizes quotas and other tariff equivalents.
Okay, this is important. Again, I'm always trying to make you understand what's going on. Because, you know, a lot of places you're going to get kind of superficial headline analysis, or you're going to get Trump good, Trump bad kind of analysis. I want you to really understand the issue. There is a law that gives the president certain kinds of powers in an emergency to regulate foreign commerce, imports, and exports. IEEPA is that law. It's been used many times for all different kinds of things. It's never been used this way before. Can he use it this way or not? Well, they'll say, can you use IEEPA in order to create an embargo? Can you embargo Russia or China or Cuba or Vietnam or Venezuela? Yeah, no problem. Okay. Can you create a quota so that the importation of desk pens or iPhones or cotton? Because remember, you know, going back to like, you know, importing things from the South in during and after the Civil War, they were a foreign nation before, right? So that's foreign power. That was, I mean, that's actually kind of, it's not part of the IEEPA law because that came in 1977. But still, it's important to understand kind of the history here. And yeah, you can do all of that. Can you create a licensing scheme so that, you know, only certain approved or they have to pass certain tests in order to be able to import? Yeah, all that. Can you impose a tax on the import, a thing that we call a tariff or a duty? And this is the question. Because Congress has the power to raise taxes, to raise revenue. And we have a long history of being very careful about who has the power to raise revenue. I mean, we may have arguably started a revolution over this. You know, right? They have taxes on tea. And, you know, that's an important thing. And so Congress is pretty jealous about its power to tax. So you also have issues of, can they delegate that power away? And there's a principle called the non-delegation principle, which is core powers of one branch of government cannot be delegated to another branch. Like, you know, could Congress delegate away the ability to declare war? And the answer is no, they cannot. You also have the major doctrines question, which is the question of whether things that Congress owns as significant powers, can they be thought of without explicitly said to have been given to an executive organization, an executive agency, without explicitly doing so? And the answer is also no. You have to get an explicit authorization from Congress. You cannot just, you know, infer. That's the, you know, major doctrines question. So these are all at play here, because simply put, embargoes, quotas, licensing, fine in an emergency. Tariffs, that's the question. Because it's a kind of revenue-generating device. It's a tax, and therefore, the other side, and I'm telling you in advance, the Supreme Court is going to say, no, 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 you cannot do that. So what he's saying here is, look, how can it be true that the president, in an emergency, can set an embargo or can set a quota, but he can't set a mere tariff? He can say no to the importation of goods, but he can't say expensive to the importation of goods? He can say slow to the importation of goods, but he can't say charge them. That seems weird. And that's one of the key questions in the case is, does it make sense? Well, and to be fair, in constitutional questions, making sense is like the last resort of legal analysis for the court. Because you have to presume that the Congress in making a law did something reasonable, that they didn't do something. But You don't ask whether it's a good idea, and you don't even ask whether it's a sensible idea unless you run into like outright contradiction. It doesn't have to make sense. So surely, in the sort of realm of possibility, Congress could say stupidly, yes, you have embargo power. Yes, you have quota power. But no, you do not have taxing power. So I think the Supreme Court, though they care about that question, is not going to rule on the basis of that question, even if that is, frankly, one of the best arguments for the other side tariffs are more nimble. The president is using them. Clearly, he's using them in a foreign relations orientation. He's using them to negotiate. He's using them under an emergency. It's just that Congress didn't give him the power to use that particular tool.
I want to make a very important distinction here. We don't contend that what's being exercised here is the power to tax. It's the power to regulate foreign commerce. These are regulatory tariffs. They are not revenue-raising tariffs. The fact that they raise revenue is only incidental. The tariffs would be most effective, so to speak, if no person ever paid them.
So this is important because if you're trying to raise revenue through taxes, that would be a congressional power. If you're trying to regulate, if you're trying to deal with foreign nations, that seems more like a presidential power as a, you know, negotiating tool. But he says, actually, these tariffs work the best if the president threatens them, gets what he wants, and then doesn't apply them, and we don't raise any money. They work the best when they don't get put into place, meaning they're not meant to raise, even though the president, of course, has bragged about the billions and billions, tens of billions, of hundreds of billions of dollars raised through the tariffs. So they clearly are being used to raise revenue now. But John Sauer says, but that's not what we prefer. We'd prefer them to change their trade policy. You know, we'd prefer them to stop sending out precursors to fentanyl. We'd prefer, you know, that's what we'd rather have. It's a failure of them to respond to the negotiating tactic that's produced the fact that we have to raise all this revenue and figure out something to do with it. All right, here's just a taste of what the justice has said, because it's important from his point of view. You know, he, of course, representing the administration. I will tell you in advance, he got flayed alive in this. I mean, it was bad. Like, and John Sauer is a very capable litigator, but he was put in an impossible situation because the law is not on Trump's side. And he spent the next hour or so in this discussion. It was brutal. I mean, it wasn't like you're stupid, you're brutal, but it was like from all sides. There was barely anybody giving him any support in this.
I just don't understand this argument. It's not an article. It's a congressional power, not a presidential power to tax. And you want to say tariffs are not taxes, but that's exactly what they are. They're generating money from American citizens, revenue. And you say it's incidental to the regulatory purpose. But I don't see how a quota is equivalent to revenue raising. A quota sets a limit to what you can import in, but it doesn't generate revenue.
Yeah, Sonia Sotomayor was first out the gate, and she's, which is not that much of a surprise, right? She's one of the liberal justices, but she was emphatic and repeated. And you know what happens sometimes is, you ever watch these hearings in the Senate, like when they're confirming a Supreme Court nominee? So what'll, and it happens also when you have hearings in the House, but what'll happen is, you know, somebody comes to testify or to appear, and they're a Republican pick, basically, let's say. So what happens is the Democrats, hard question, argument, fight, whatever, attack. And then the Republicans are like, all right, come on over here and rest for a minute. I'm going to give you some softball questions. I'm going to talk about how awesome you are. Democrats, argue. Republican, okay, here, take a drink, you know, relax. You know, like that's how it works, okay? That also is often how it works in the Supreme Court. You know, the liberals ask their pointed questions and try to trip up the person that represents the view they don't generally agree with. And then the Republicans are kind of, the conservatives, and I hate these terms for the Supreme Court, but it's sort of true. You know, the conservatives will kind of come back in, but isn't this really what you mean? You know, like there's a little bit of help on both sides. That was not the case here. This was Sotomayor and Kagan and Ketanji Brown Jackson viciously exposing the lack of support congressionally in IEPA for this policy. And then when the other side comes in, it's like Amy Coney Barrett, and she says, hey, bro.
Trustees, it's time
Sauer, can I just ask you a question? Can you point to any other place in the code or any other time in history where that phrase, together, regulate importation, has been used to confer tariff-imposing authority?
Can you point to literally any other time in history where these words meant what you say they mean? And that's the nice way of saying, bro.
Well, as to regulate importation, that was held in TWEA. So obviously, and that's...
Okay, so an intermediate appellate court held it in TWEA, but you just told Justice Kavanaugh that wasn't your lead argument, that your lead argument was this long history of the phrase regulate importation being understood to include tariff authority. So my question is, has there ever been another instance in which a statute has conferred, used that language to confer the power?
Well,
putting aside Yoshida.
I mean, obviously, other statutory example is just imports. The cases we rely on are cases where, for example, in Gibbons, it's Ogden and Justice Story's treatise.
But that just shows the word can be used that way. None of those cases talked about it as conferring tariff authority.
And this became even worse later on when Sotomayor says, would you please answer her question? He kept not answering. When you don't have an answer, you here's all the smoke to pay attention to. Again, John Sauer is a very capable litigator. He knows he doesn't have an answer for this question. Please don't keep asking me that question. Okay, so what's my prediction? You had one or two justices who might vote for this. I'm suspicious that in the interest of making a clear declaration that this is not within the president's power, that they might vote 9-0. I wouldn't be surprised if it's 7-2. I wouldn't be surprised if it's 8-1. I would be surprised actually if it's 6-3, because I think Kavanaugh maybe, but I think, you know, Barrett and Roberts and then the three liberals are all going to vote together and they're going to be right. Now, Congress could modify IEEPA. Congress could delegate the power to tariff. Of course, this Congress is not going to do any such thing because this Congress is not going to do anything. they can't even pay SNAP benefits. So, but I just want you to understand that we're going to come back to this again throughout the show because this is a big deal. And understanding what the Supreme Court is and is not ruling on in this case, they're not ruling on whether it's a good policy to let the president do tariffs. They're not ruling on whether they're effective. They're ruling on whether the president has the constitutional authority delegated to them by the Congress, who has the original authority to impose taxes and to regulate foreign commerce, whether they have done that in this case. And the answer is going to be no. 525 on News Radio 90. That means they're going to have to undo all these tariffs. Just so you're know what to expect. I'm Andrew McKay.
Hey, Dave Ramsey here. You've heard me talk about one car dealership in Pensacola, Frontier Motors at 230 Beverly Parkway. Folks, new cars lose 11% of their value the second you drive them off the lot. So for years, Frontier Motors has been saving Pensacola residents thousands of dollars by getting them into the best previously owned vehicles. And thousands of people have enjoyed Frontier Motors, no hassle, no pressure experience. Just the best slightly used vehicles in town at a fair price. But don't take my word for it. Look around, and you'll start noticing all the Frontier Motors decals and tags. They're everywhere. So if you're in the market for a vehicle, do yourself a favor and see the friendly folks and the huge inventory at Frontier Motors. You can't miss them. Just look for the big buffalo on the lot. That's Frontier Motors at 230 Beverly Parkway. And don't forget to tell them Dave Ramsey said hey.
There's nothing like when you get that part from eBay and it just fits. Yeah, the first time. So you can do less of this and get right back to more of this. At eBay, you'll find all the parts you need, guaranteed to fit, at prices you'll love. Sounds good, doesn't it? eBay. Things people love. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us today at 9:30 with me, Eldon Scott, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sunny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Scott, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
An official message from Medicare.
Medicare plans change from 1 year to the next. And this year, it's important for you to review your current coverage and compare all your options during Medicare open enrollment. Compare health plans, drug coverage, and costs. See if you can save some money, and don't forget to make sure your drugs are covered. Open enrollment ends December 7th. Visit Medicare.gov or call 1-800-MEDICARE.
Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Start your mornings off informed with all things Pensacola on the Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Nick, where am I?
I am, I am, I am.
Good morning, 529 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. If you need a roof, if you need a roof repair or a replacement, Quality Roofing Solutions can take care of you for that. And I know you may not know what you need, and that's fine. Call them and ask. And you say, well, Andrew, I mean, you know, they're a roofing company. Obviously, they're going to try to get me to replace the roof. Well, about 90% of what they do is total replacement. About 10% is repair. And it's not because of, you know, the size of the job. It's because, honestly, by the time they're repairing one portion, it probably means the rest of it sort of needs it, but maybe doesn't have to have it just yet. I mean, there are exceptions, okay, but generally speaking. And, you know, if you're going to repair one part and then you're going to replace it, the whole thing in like 4 years, why not just replace it now? You know, you're going to rebuild what you rebuild right now. That doesn't make sense. Plus, it's going to be more expensive. Plus, if you do the whole replacement now, you're probably going to save money, at least on your insurance, and save money versus the cost in the future. Anyway, just talk to them, though. They'll explain it. They'll talk, you know, walk you through all of that. They've got a 4.9 rating on Google Quality Roofing Solutions. They built 10,000 roofs in the last 19 years since Brian Ward started the company. Outstanding local company. They always come up on my my wife. I asked about this, and you know, she's like, yeah, oh, yeah. Next door, they always come up as the company people recommend, and they're fantastic. QualityRoofingSolutions.com, 777-0961. David Wayne in the newsroom with a headline maybe for us. David?
Absolutely. Well, the shutdown now in day 38 and thousands of flights being canceled today by the FAA as they're making cuts at 40 of the nation's busiest airports.
News. I'm CJ Pop. With the delays and cancellations in the skies of our nation ramping up, it's a direct result of the government shutdown now in day 38.
As Sean Duffy announced, they're cutting in certain areas 10%. And they want to make sure it's 100% safe. That's why they're doing it.
President Trump says the FAA is reducing air travel at 40 airports starting today. Also on this Friday,
Senate Republicans are aiming for a test vote on a new spending package that would include long-term funding for the Department of Agriculture, the legislative branch, and the military until next fall. It would also include a promise for a vote on Obamacare subsidies. Democrats, though, many want the government to reopen, but progressives are refusing to budge without a firm health care deal.
Fox's Mariela Rivera and the president meets later this morning with Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. Florida Senator Ashley Moody wants President Trump to let NAS Pensacola's homecoming air show go on as it was originally planned. She wrote a letter to the president yesterday requesting his consideration to allow it to continue despite the ongoing shutdown, which is now the longest in history, 38 days today. The homecoming air show was originally scheduled for next weekend on the 14th and 15th, but was canceled last Friday. In her letter, Moody said that with it being the 250th anniversary of the Navy and the Marine Corps, and NAS Pensacola being the cradle of aviation, she said the show would be a point of pride for the military and important for recruitment and morale. Moody, of course, also offered to host President Trump if he would like to attend the show. Now, the Escambia Board of Commissioners discussed career options for students in Escambia County yesterday at their Committee of the Whole meeting. Local economic development officials discussed educational opportunities, which they say come around at early ages around here.
From middle school, you know, sixth, seventh grade, as they start to go down a path where they can go and get that work experience and also tie that together. So as they move from a certificate to an associate's degree to a bachelor's degree, there's those opportunities and those pathways are there. It's just not been illustrated very well for the population.
Florida West CEO Chris Plante, and he says 70% of jobs that are being created now don't require a four-year college degree. He said certifications and associate's degrees can generally be acquired at low cost, sometimes even for free. And Plante says the jobs are generally not just jobs, but careers that pay very well. Florida is suing Planned Parenthood. Attorney General James Uthmeyer said yesterday he filed a lawsuit over the organization's marketing practices. Uthmeyer says Planned Parenthood is misrepresenting the safety of chemical abortion drugs by saying they're safer than Tylenol. He said Florida will not tolerate blatant lies using fabricated medical facts. Uthmeyer wants the organization to pay a $10,000 fine for each chemical abortion provided in the last 2 years. Well, if lawmakers aren't working, they shouldn't get paid. That's the idea behind Rick Scott's No Budget, No Pay Act. Scott spoke on the Senate floor yesterday, calling for that bill to be passed immediately. He said it would prevent members of Congress from receiving their paychecks if they don't do their most basic job of funding the federal government. Former NFL star Antonio Brown will face an attempted murder charge in Miami. The former wide receiver is being extradited from Dubai, where he was arrested yesterday. The 37-year-old allegedly shot someone 6 months ago at a celebrity boxing match. Brown was being held in a New Jersey jail last night. Miami police say no matter who you are, what power or money you have, if you commit a crime, you'll be located and brought to justice. It's 535 at News Radio, 92.3. Again, right now we've got 62 degrees, cloudy skies here in Pensacola. Our next news at 6, we've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio, 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Virtual care company Amada Health said it will start prescribing GLP-1s and other obesity drugs and help patients manage those medications. The announcement expands the offerings under the company's weight management program as its membership grows to more than 800,000. Tesla CEO Elon Musk said he expects the automaker's full self-driving software, a driver assistance system, will be fully approved in China early next year. The Tesla system has been partially approved in China since February. Before that, Tesla owners could use a less advanced and cheaper autopilot option. Bloomberg News reports the Dutch government is ready to shelve the order that gave it power to block or change key corporate decisions at chipmaker Nexperia if China resumes exports of critical chips. Dutch Economy Minister Vincent Kermans said he believes computer chips made by Nexperia will reach customers in Europe and the rest of the world in the coming days. Futures are slightly lower. Thursday, the Dow Industrials lost 398. That's your money now.
Need to move across town, across the country, or even across the globe? Trust Lambert Moving Systems. Veteran-owned, military-approved, and now celebrating over 100 years of moving excellence. As a quality award winner, BVB-accredited, and agent for North American Van Lines, they handle local, long-distance, industrial, and international moves with packing, storage, and warehousing available. Serving Pensacola to Mobile and all the surrounding areas and supporting the Gary Sintz Foundation. Choose a team with a legacy. Lambert Moving Systems. Visit GoLambertTeam.com today.
It's open enrollment time for health insurance. Have you signed up? Do you know where? Whether you currently have coverage or not, there are some important things you need to know. Get your questions answered. Tune in Tuesday at 10 as Chad PQ from Affiliated Insurance joins the Pensacola Expert Panel. Get the facts and the latest information on healthcare Tuesday at 10 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
If you have an HD radio in your car, you can listen to News Radio 92.3 from Fort Walton Beach all the way to the Mississippi line.
You heard me right. Here's how.
Tune to 98.7. Wait a few seconds until you see the HD signal displayed. Then turn the radio up two clicks to HD3. Then you can listen to Andrew McKay, Pet Talk with Meg, Marpia Van Camp and Robbins, and Petscola Right Now, all over the Gulf Coast. It's News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning, 537 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Yesterday, we had a really good interview with the county administrator, Wes Moreno. We talked about the company badges for the fire service. We talked about access to the beach on Perdido Key and a bunch of things that were going to be on the agenda for the county commission meeting. Wes Moreno is the county administrator. Wes, welcome back, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew. As always, it's great to be here.
Yeah, great, great to have you. We got a lot of stuff on the agenda, a lot of very interesting things. Some things I don't understand, and that's why I like to talk to you, because I get clarification on them. But I want to start with one that's really become a sudden firestorm, and that is the company patches for the Escambia County firefighters. I'll tell you how I understand the story, and then you can tell me either what I got wrong or, you know, what I need to understand in order to understand it. The way it was conveyed by the firefighters on their Facebook page is, you know, we've got these company patches that are a very big deal for a paramilitary entity like the firefighters. Their brotherhood, their bonding, their meaningful, their identity expression, they're all the things that we understand. And suddenly, for reasons that nobody can quite explain, all of the trucks, all the engines had to be scrubbed of their insignia, their unique logos that represent their company. And it doesn't make sense to anybody, and it seems like there can't be a justification for it because they've been approved by the county, and some of them have been in place for decades. So it's the what gives. You're the county administrator. I know you know. Help me understand.
Well, I don't know that they're all going to be scrubbed. You know, this is an effort to we are reviewing all of our logos and brand standards, and we just want to make sure we're consistent throughout the county. And that, you know, what goes on the front-facing side of a vehicle, whether it be a fire vehicle or a public works vehicle or EMS or anything else, we just want to make sure that it's in good taste and that it reflects the image that we want to portray. So it's something that's going to take place all throughout the county. We're reviewing all of our stuff. But, you know, to say that we're going to scrub every truck of everything, we're not saying that at all. But we review some logos. Yeah, sure, probably so.
Well, but I was told that the trucks had been told to get rid of the logos.
Like I had told, flag at this moment.
I'm sorry, Wes. I had been told that they had been taken off. Like they were told, get them off, and they were out there scraping them off.
I didn't have a conversation until late yesterday afternoon, and that was not the direction. That they had to go out to the bays and start peeling off logos. That was not the direction.
Okay, so your direction.
I'll get into that this morning, but that was not the discussion I had late yesterday afternoon.
Okay, so your direction, properly understood, should have been, we're reviewing all of them, take no action yet?
Correct. Yeah, we're going to review them, and we're going to take a look at them. And some of them may, you know, the majority of them may stay like they are. There may be one or two that changes, but, you know, that's how it is.
So it sounds like, kind of the way I had heard it was that this was an effort to get rid of the company patches and replace them with, say, something standard for the county logo. But it sounds like what you're saying is we're fine keeping the company patches as long as they are not, I mean, I'm guessing because you haven't, but I'm guessing, you know, we're just concerned about maybe some content or something offensive or something like that. But you're fine with having company patches. Do I hear you right?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. So you'll talk about that. I mean, you'll talk about it, at the meeting today, or you talk with fire chief, or, you know, what's the next action step here?
No, we'll talk about it internally with the assistant county administrator and the public safety director and fire chief.
Okay. Okay. Well, I mean, I look forward to hearing more about what happens. I just know the firefighters are furious. They are furious.
Well, yeah, I understand. Hey, I understand. If I don't blame them, I probably will be too.
And then sort of not necessarily connected, but they've in the same post where they raised this question or this objection, they were also concerned about the pay increase that had been approved and HR stuff had been done, but the budget office hadn't caught up. And so they missed this or it's somehow delayed. Do you want to address that for a second?
It's a bit delayed. Yeah, it'll be on the next paycheck. We'll try to make sure it's retro. It was a delay. It's coming through the budget office. We've been a lot of things rolling through there, so there was a bit of a delay.
Okay. Hey, just to go back for a second, somebody texted me, and again, this may have been a miscommunication, but texted me a screenshot of an email from Chief Harrison saying, effective immediately, all company patches shall be removed from all Escambia fire rescue apparatus. This action is mandatory, must be completed as soon as possible. If you can't remove the decal without causing damage, please email give a name here to schedule a time to have it removed. And so, again, you just think this is a misunderstanding? This is a miscommunication?
I think somebody's got the horse ahead of the cart or the cart ahead of the horse, and we'll get into it this morning.
Okay, great. I mean, that's, you know, sometimes mistakes happen, and I'd, you know, love to see them fixed. Fantastic. On the agenda for today, and you and I had talked about this before, that there is I think it's called the Consolidated Universal Bill or something like that, and it would put hard costs only for code violation remediation for homes onto the property tax bill. And when you and I last talked about this, I was kind of uncomfortable. I talked with my wife, and you're going to love this. My wife says, so, Andrew, we're going to make them pay for the services the county has already provided to them as delinquent property owners on their tax bill. And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, and the problem is, and I said, no, you're right. So is that the extent of this change? Is that the idea?
That is the extent of it, yeah. Just an effort to try to collect money that we've expended abating some of these properties.
And it's not the, like, because I know the board often has these conversations about soft costs and fees and fines and things like that. It's not that slice. It's just the hard cost, the money the county has actually expended to give a service to these people who haven't done their job properly.
Correct.
Okay, perfect. That makes a lot more sense. The Navy Point Ordinance makes perfect sense to me that you want to prohibit building on Navy Point Park and anywhere within the plat. Makes perfect sense to me that you want to prohibit conveying or selling the land. The one that I mean, genuinely looks unconstitutional to me is the requirement to have a unanimous vote in the future. I always thought that a board now cannot bind a future board. They cannot exert their authority to restrict the future authority of a board. I checked with Allison, and she seems to think this is okay. Can you explain this to me? Because I'm really confused by this one.
Yeah, well, as you know, it's an effort to preserve the park there. It's been well received by the community there at Navy Point. And the unanimous part is it is an effort to make a statement to say, hey, we want to protect this park. We want to, moving forward in the future, you know, we want to preserve the sanctity and preserve the feel and the look and of the park and the amenities there. And what future boards do, you know, we can certainly can't control what future boards do, but it is an effort and a sign to say, hey, we're serious about this and we want to make sure that it remains as is.
I guess my
concern has been run through the legal department.
Yeah, and I know my concern was sort of the philosophical issue, but also it seems like if you can do this, is there any limit to when you could do it? You know, could they put a 3-2 vote up for a unanimous rescission for almost any measure they wanted to make more permanent? It seems like the answer has to be no, or even if you have a 3-person quorum, a 2-1 vote could theoretically do this. And so you kind of see where I'm going with this. What are the limits of this power to require a universal rescission or unanimous rescission?
Well, I think it's a good effort. It's a good statement to the community and as a whole to say, hey, you know, we hear you, we hear your concerns, and we want to put this ordinance in place, and we want to make it as challenging as possible moving forward in the future to make any changes there at Navy Point.
There's a couple of items that have what seem like very minor changes to the current ordinance. One has to do with camping. It's removing the word overnight, and I'm assuming that's because verifying that somebody has in fact been there overnight in the car or the tent or the, you know, or whatever is hard. This is meant to make it easier to enforce that ordinance. Am I on the right track?
Yeah, it's easier. To make it easier to enforce. Folks who are hanging out in different meetings or camping underneath the bridge overpasses there along the interstate in Brent Lane, you know, they're there all night, then they're there all day, some of them camping, sleeping, doing whatever they're doing. So this is an effort with the Sheriff's Department to be able to put something in place to make it more enforceable and hopefully make some improvements in that regard.
Makes perfect sense. Also, they could say, well, I left for a minute. You know, was I there overnight? I mean, sort of the technical difficulty of that word. The other one is the panhandling ordinance or the, you know, pedestrian safety ordinance. The current is that a median 6 feet or under, they cannot stand on that. You're proposing expanding it to 8.5 feet. I'm guessing, but you tell me, that there are specific medians this is meant to encompass, and I'm guessing it's Davis on the on-ramp to I-10, but maybe it's something else that you have in mind. First of all, am I on the right track, and is there particular ones this is to address?
Well, we have medians all over the county that need to be addressed. But the 8.5 foot comes from the FDOT Green Book Standards, ACD Standard Book, 8.5. And that's where that measurement comes from. It does give us a little more latitude in enforcing.
Gotcha.
Some of the other ordinances there.
And that's totally your bailiwick. Like, that's, you know, transportation, roads and stuff. That is West Moreno's absolute domain. I did want to ask, just because it's come up with the sheriff, and I know you guys are working on this, but the situation on Perdido Key with the beach access and, you know, obviously, you know, the concerns, and it's an ongoing fight. And I know, you know, Commissioner Stroberger was in the mediation meeting that came to nothing. But the sheriff was telling me on Tuesday that, you know, it's hard for them to know what to enforce when nobody's clear about what the exact status of beach access is on Perdido Key. Any prospect of clarity in the near future?
Well, I think the latest development is the lawsuit has been dropped. You know, there was a lawsuit that prompted the mediation. a couple of weeks ago. Well, that lawsuit has now been dropped this week, actually the day before yesterday. I think we were notified. So that's good news for us. So that what we feel like that means is that the strip going down from the parking areas, and then a strip 75 foot wide, 1.2 miles long, I think it is eligible for the public to utilize.
As of now?
You know, yes, as of now.
And that's from that beach access right off of Perdido Key Drive. That's that very first one?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yep.
Okay, so they can go out there,
so
and then
like
they
it,
can...
It's like it was. It goes back, reverts back like it was when Commissioner Burgosh brought in water safety and we started patrolling that area down.
Yeah.
It'll be just like that.
Okay. Okay, so people are allowed to go laterally on the first 75 feet next to the water on those areas.
That's correct.
Outstanding. I mean, at least clarity. You know what I mean? I know a lot of the owners, they're not thinking outstanding, but... You know, what I want is just a resolution. So, that's fantastic. I'm sorry, I seem like I kind of interrupted you. Anything else you wanted to say on that?
Nope, that's good.
Okay, fantastic. You guys did a ribbon cutting on a waterfront project?
Yeah, you know, we have a committee, Opioid Abatement Funding Advisory Committee, that we put together. And the money that comes through this committee and flows through Escambia County is from the lawsuits with the big pharmaceutical pharmacies. And, you know, they've been quietly working and tolling away there. And we put notice of funding opportunities out to our community partners and those throughout the community. They bring in their ideas. They bring in their plans. They bring in their credentials and all the stuff they have to do. And Waterfront brought a project to us to purchase a house or houses, actually, as it turns out, and then renovate the house and turn it into housing for men in recovery. And we cut a ribbon on that, I think it was Monday or Tuesday. And it was just a good deal, a good event to see that the fruition of the money and the work of the board come to fruition and see that amenity come online. And I think in two weeks, I think they said it was, there'll be folks living there. And it's key. It's a key element to recovery, having a stable place to live.
Absolutely.
There's a church down the block. There's George Stone not too far from it. So there's some opportunities there for the folks that they're going to reside there in those houses. And it was actually two houses on one piece of property, a good-sized piece of property. And I think it's a good thing for the community, and it's something that quietly happens behind the scenes that the community doesn't typically see.
You know, I actually really love when we're able to tell the good things. I love talking about the opioid abatement work that y'all are doing through CORE. And, you know, even sometimes it's a little stuff like when the county does a drainage project that makes life better, you know, on a street near us on Oakfield, you know, I was worried in the beginning, but that street has not flooded since we've had the work done. So it's fantastic. And like, you know, I talked to the county about a pothole on Burgess, and it's an FDOT road. So somebody in the county called FDOT fixed it within 24 hours. Like, I was amazed at how fast that was. So, you know, the good things, I'll talk about the bad things, but we'll talk about the good things, too, and, you know, the more of them are better. Anything else before we go, Wes? Anything else you want to let us know about either for the meeting or that the county's doing?
Well, we had an interesting story in regards to the SEC tournament. One of the teams got through playing the other night, and a drive belt broke on their bus. They were trying to get back to Pensacola Beach after the game, and four of our parks guys were able to crawl under there, and the driver had a belt. He just couldn't get it on. So they were able to crawl under there in about 20 minutes, get the team on its way to Pensacola Beach, and all things went well. So it's just the small things that you encounter in a day sometimes.
Beachfront living, competitive soccer, and on-the-spot mechanical repair to buses. That's we offer all
there
the services.
Go.
Wes Moreno, we're looking forward to the meeting today. It should be very interesting. County Administrator Wes Moreno, as always, thank you for the time. Thanks for taking some of my challenging questions. I really appreciate it. So we'll talk to you again soon, sir.
All right, we'll see you.
Absolutely. And by the way, in case you, you know, had not seen, this obviously means that the resolution of the fire patch controversy came and went quickly. at least I hope so. I hope it goes quickly. I did find out. I was looking at the logos yesterday. Remember, we were talking about this, and I was looking at some of the patches. And I'm strongly suspicious that the one that had caused consternation was the one with the Monopoly guy for Station 2, the brand new fire station out in Beulah on 9 Mile, because it's the Monopoly guy with piles.
Wouldn't it be a copyright issue?
Piles. Well, piles of money next to them.
Right.
And in the environment where we have this MSBU, you know, where the fire service fee has doubled, the idea of the fire service bragging about standing on top of a bunch of the money does seem a little bit. But that logo pre-existed, the MSBU going up. And by the way, you know the reason for it?
Why?
It's right by Navy Federal. A massive bank. So having the monopoly bank guy buy the Navy Federal, you see how it actually kind of makes sense.
It does.
But, you know, people might, sometimes administration might misunderstand the meaning of these badges. And so, you know, I don't know. Don't ask the suits what the badges mean to the grunts, you know? Let the grunts tell you. So anyway, we'll see what all comes of it specifically, if any of them have to change. But I'm strongly suspicious that that's the one. But like I said, we'll see. You know, and they'll go through the process of making sure they're all approving them all, basically. 437-1620. Also, big news about the beach, right? That people have 75 foot of access to the beach. I'm sure the sheriff is going to be excited to hear that because now we have clarity. Well, let's see. Anyway, I want to believe we do. I really want to believe we do. Let's see. If you're thinking about buying or selling a home and you want to get an outstanding realtor, Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty do that. You know, one of the things that I was asking her recently, because I'm always checking with her, hey, what are you doing these days? What do you want me to be telling people? Because I've been promoting her for years because she's fantastic. A longtime friend. I knew her back in her, you know, TV days and ever since. But she said, well, honestly, Andrew, one of the things you can tell people is that with the market shifts, it's not as easy these days. And a lot of realtors are, you know, struggling to sell homes. And she said, we're not. We're still getting the job done, 3 to 4 homes per week. But what I'm encountering, she says, is, you know, people who come to me not as their first realtor, but as their third realtor or their fourth realtor or their sixth realtor. And I said, really? People have 5 realtors and don't get a home sold? She's like, yeah. And then we sell it. Okay, well, you don't have to wait that long, but I cannot imagine the frustration of going through that whole process. So, you know, call her now. You don't have to wait. And look, it's not that there are not other good realtors. It's just that, you know, experience and volume matters and gives you the expertise in order to get things done and to get them done on time and to get you all the way to closing and all that. 786-3996 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty.
Think all art festivals are the same? Think Foo Foo Fest in Pensacola isn't your scene? Think you've heard all the music before or that local theater is predictable? Well, foo around and find out. If you think you're not up for random adventures, can't be surprised anymore, or don't believe you can make memories around every corner, foo around and find out at Foo Foo Fest in Pensacola, Florida, October 30th through November 10th, 2025. Visit foofoofest.com to learn more.
This holiday season, whether you're shopping for clients, coworkers, or loved ones, Prim and Proper in Gulf Breeze makes gift-giving easy and memorable. From custom apparel and drinkware to unique holiday gifts and decor, you'll find the perfect way to show your appreciation and spread cheer. Make your gifts stand out with personal touches and professional quality, all from your local experts at Prim and Proper. Visit them at 336 Gulf Breeze Parkway or primandproper.com.
This one is under the lights at Death Valley as Florida State battles Clemson in an ACC showdown Saturday night on the Seminole Sports Network.
FSU travels to Death Valley to take on Clemson. Last week, the Seminoles crushed Wake Forest 42-7 to raise their record to 4-4, while Clemson lost to Duke 46-45. The Florida State Seminoles versus the Clemson Tigers. Pre-game is set for 4 o'clock Saturday on News Radio 92.3.
Hi, this is Todd Thompson, President and CEO of the Greater Pensacola Chamber of Commerce. Tune in to the Pensacola Expert Panel for the Chamber Connection Show that will keep you informed on what's going on with your Chamber of Commerce. Tune in this Monday morning at 10 to find out about our upcoming events, all of our different programs, and what's happening with our local business community. It's the Chamber Connection Show every other Monday at 10 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Want to win tickets to Florida State home games? Download our News Radio Pensacola app, then tap that app. Tap that app to enter Monday through Friday on News Radio 92.3.
Ram Man, He-Man, and Castle Grayskull, each sold separately. You have to put the castle together.
Castle Grayskull.
Oh, the good old
every
days,
child's
man.
Dream.
Oh, I know. I wanted that so bad for Christmas.
558 News Radio 92.3. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Good morning, gentlemen. Well, President Trump announcing some cost cuts on obesity drugs. The White House says that Eli Lilly, which makes Zepbound, and Novo Nordisk, which manufactures Wegovy, will be lowering the price of those injectable weight loss drugs to as little as $350 a month for starter doses. The list prices currently exceed $1,000. A former Department of Justice employee who admitted throwing a sandwich at a federal agent has been acquitted of misdemeanor assault. The not guilty verdict for Sean Dunn came on Thursday after prosecutors failed to get a grand jury to return an indictment.
Yeah, the so-called butter battery case. No? I'll keep working on it. Anyway, flight from Miami canceled on American Airlines and a flight to Miami canceled on American Airlines today. We're starting to see some of the effects of the throttling that took place, that started to take place with transportation. We'll have the Transgressors Memorial Service coming up at 6:20. Find out who got canceled this week. 92.